afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon, Melody.
Well, all kinds of records are being broken in the paper markets today, and we'll be talking about that a little bit. But a lot of warnings are beginning to be heard through Goldman Sachs, and I'm not sure how much I'm going to listen to Goldman Sachs warnings, but when they're combined with other warnings and so forth, it kind of makes you...
Who knows? They might tell the truth sometime.
Well, it's kind of hard because, you know, they have key players in the White House, so you're really not sure how... you know, to view it. However, what it does do with their warnings, it just confirms what we tell our listeners. Then that's what it is. It confirms what we're telling you folks, that we have major problems. And I'll tell you another example of why I believe, and it's really not a very scientific reason, but why I believe the markets are at a peak. People are getting mad at you when you mention that the stock market is high, that it's going to reverse itself. They get upset with you. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. So let's get started right away.
Popping their bubble, Melody.
Bursting
their bubbles, and they don't like...
Oh, the Dow's going to 30,000.
That's hate speech, Melody.
Well...
Bursting bubbles, that's hate speech. You may want 5 years in the slammer, Melody, for bursting people's bubbles.
Fake news. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, they mentioned 30,000 and you just kind of have to chuckle. And when you say, well, you know, there's really not anything that's keeping it up there. I mean, the volume is so low and everything. It's an illusion. And click, hang up on you. They don't want to hear it. They want to brag about it, but they don't want to hear any other ideas or thoughts or possibilities. So gold today in the spot market was $12.36, a little pressure down $2. It was a lot lower early morning trade, so it did come back. And even with a stronger dollar today, not a bad day for gold. We'll have to see if it follows through. Silver on the COMEX was $17.97, down 0.06. Platinum was down 1.56 at 1,003. Crude oil today, the WTI was up 0.66 at 54.06. The breakout number everyone's looking for is 55 for the WTI. Paper markets today. Of course, this is 2 days of trading since the markets were closed yesterday, as we were. But the Dow was up 118 points, 20,743. The NASDAQ was up 27, 5,865. The S&P was up 14 at 2,365. 10-year yield, 2.43%. Euro was 105, so the euro's been getting a lot of pressure, 105. European markets were basically mixed. So 2 days of trade, so 50 points yesterday, 50 points today. But again, stocks rose to records. We have retailer results. They topped the estimates. Walmart had some unbelievable numbers, the best numbers they've had in, 4 years or something like that. Again, fresh signs of global growth has started to accelerate. What that is, the emerging markets, and a lot of it is due to China. You had the Mexico's peso that rallied after the central bank signaled support. As I mentioned, Wall Street, but also not Wall Street, but Walmart stores, they gave out some good numbers along with Home Depot. And European equities, they advanced after readings on euro area manufacturing topped estimates and mining companies rallied. Oh, joy. Things are wonderful. And everyone now is expecting the Federal Reserve. Bets are being made that the Federal Reserve will raise rates next month, as soon as next month, in March. So they could go another quarter point next month. But are we having peak optimism Is this peak optimism? And that's what Goldman Sachs says. The surge in confidence following Donald Trump's November victory is reaching an inflection point. Investors counting on tax cuts and an economic boom to fuel a surge in corporate profits are getting ahead of themselves, and this is according to Goldman Sachs. David Kostin, Goldman's chief U.S. equity strategist, wrote in a note, he says, financial market reconciliation lies ahead. The S&P 500 index will give back recent gains as investors embrace the reality that the tax reform is likely to provide a smaller, later tailwind to corporate earnings than originally expected. So the idea is all this fuel to the stock market is based on these huge, you know, tax reform and where these corporate earnings will be, you know, will just grow out of thin air. And if it doesn't come, if those tax returns are not as great as what everyone is expecting, you know, there goes, you know, what we've recently received in this past couple of months. There were some other interesting points out today that people have made. And I'm not sure when the State of the Union address is out. Do you recall?
No.
Well, that's the inflection point of that they're looking to as far as him coming out saying, I thought it was in January.
That's what I thought, too.
Maybe the first year president doesn't have a State of the Union?
No, it can't be. I thought it was January, too, but the truth of the matter is, well, it would have to be after the new president takes office.
I'll have to look that up.
I don't think they gave Obama State of the Union. It would have been fun, though, if Obama gave a State of the Union speech, say, January 10th, after Hillary had been defeated and Trump was scheduled to be inaugurated. I think he went in on the 17th or thereabouts. If Obama, wouldn't that have been something to hear? That would have been a real... So, I am surprised, though. Where's the State of the Union for... I don't recall it ever being in February, but I could be wrong. I don't remember. Maybe they're going to do it in July. They'll do it maybe on 4th of
July.
Maybe
4th of July. Highly unlikely. Well, who knows with this, with Mr. Trump. But anyway, we have corporate earnings estimates for 2017. They have fallen by 1% since the election, but the S&P has surged 10%. The stock market has been rallying since the election, all on promises, as we talked about, promises of tax cuts and deregulation. Art Cashin, he's the UBS director of floor operations at the New York Stock Exchange. He told CNBC today, he says, well, we're significantly overbought now. I mean, I think we're really vulnerable in the sense that things like the advanced decline indicator is not keeping up with the rate of the rally. Just a week ago, Art Cashin was telling CNBC that the market rally is thin despite positive economic data pushing the U.S. stocks to new highs. Driving what he called the very narrow rally, mainly Goldman Sachs and Apple, both of which are frequent chart toppers in their respective sectors, financial and technology. So you got basically two companies that's pushing the Dow to these unseen numbers. He says the volume was nothing to write home about. So you look at these things and say, how much of this is an illusion and how much of it is real? He continued today, and he says, we're above 8%, 8% above the 200-day moving average, getting close to 10%. That's usually a warning signal. He says this rise could be a market making a, just a move, again, based on the promises that Mr. Trump will make. Cashin said the markets anticipate a showdown coming relevant to the State of the Union address, which I'm not sure when that is. He thinks the president has to give at least some hint of details. If he just gets up and says, I'm still working on this package and it's wonderful, the market, you know, won't accept it very well. He says, so we're really at a point. And again, how much of it is real and how much of it is an illusion?
Well, one of the things you mentioned is that you have a low volume on the stock trading. That makes it easier to manipulate the market. All right, if you have a massive volume, then it has to pretty much reflect what the public's doing. When it has a limited volume, it's at least an opportunity for people in positions of power to manipulate the market and hold it together artificially without reflecting public. I mean, if one of the things about it, if the volume is down, the implication, at least, is that the public, and it's not necessarily true, because the public is not really involved in the stock markets to the same extent that it was true a decade ago. Right? There are less, it's more institutions, less public, the way as I understand it. So we've already got that problem, but my point is, if volume is down, perhaps that's evidence that the public is losing interest in the stock market even more than it already has. Now, that's not necessarily true, but it's a possibility, and if it is, it suggests that the public is losing confidence in the stock market. They're wary of the stock market. Hard to say.
No, I think their confidence is at all-time highs. I mean, most of them, you know, the only way they're invested in the stock market, they really don't have any money, is basically through their IRAs. These are all huge hedge funds and so forth, and the volumes aren't there. They're beginning to move out and go someplace else. So the higher volumes just aren't there. And so, but your euphoria, your optimism, I mean, just like I was talking to a friend yesterday, and they have all their money in the paper. They got in when the Dow was at 6,000. Yeah. They get a lot of dividends, and hey, I'm happy for them. Yeah. I don't want to see that end.
Well, but in the they meantime, don't want to see it end either, and they've got a long track record. If they got in at 6,000, they ought to be pretty happy right now.
But in the meantime, and the thing of it is, what happened, they lost, both of them lost their jobs in 2008. They were able to find something and position themselves and get their regular retirement accounts that they had, and they've done very well. And I wanted to continue for them. But on the other hand, you have to look at the reality of things. And it was, you know, I talked to her yesterday, and she's the one who brought up Dow 30,000. I was like, well, yeah. He says, but, you know, what's really fueling the Dow 30? Well, a lot of people are saying the Dow's going to go to 30,000, but what's fueling it? Well, I got to go. And when I started to mention anything, she says, well, I got to go now. So the people don't want to hear about it. They don't want to hear that they, you know, might be in investments and that they're going to lose a lot. They are caught up in the euphoria. And that is, to me, one of a warning signal. It's just like when Rockefeller...
It's definitely a danger. You know, you buy low and you sell high. The problem is if
nobody
you succeeded in buying low...
Because you always...
When it gets to high, you think it's going to go higher and higher and higher. And higher. It's going to go to 30,000. No, it's going to go to 50,000. No, it's going to go to 100,000. Think how much money we're going to have. And you don't dare sell. Now, it's very... And that's not criticism. That's just human nature. If your horse has been winning the race time and time and time again, you have a consistent track record. You are not going to be, it's hard to be objective and say now's the time to bail. You're afraid that if you do, people are going to laugh at you. Ha, 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 you sold when the market was 20,000 and it went to 30,000.
They're not afraid of people going to laugh at them. They're afraid of, no, they're not.
I'll laugh at them.
No, they're afraid.
Let's strike fear into their hearts.
Let me finish, please. They're afraid of losing the little bit that they might gain. They're afraid of losing from 21,000 to maybe 22,000. They're afraid of being out of the game. That's what they're afraid they're going to miss something instead of protecting what they have. So they stay in the game and they become, you know, where greed just, and I'm not even sure if it's greed, but it just, you know, it just overwhelms.
There's two kinds
objective
of fear.
Thinking.
There's two kinds. You know, there's the kind of fear that you can have when things are going badly. There's the kind of fear that you can have
exactly.
When things are going well.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid to make a move because what'll I do? Should I get out now? Should I bail now and then watch it go up another 5,000 points? Or should I stick it out and hope it goes another 10,000? It's difficult. And what it comes down to is if you're going to be a trader, it really requires an enormous capacity for objectivity where you can call a spade a spade. right? And not run on sentiment, not run on what you hope. You have to be able to look at it and say, this is what I think is going to happen, and I have these reasons to point to it. And it can't just be sentiment, or at least it shouldn't be, in my opinion. Sentiment will carry a certain distance, but it's not a reliable, you know, it's not a reliable horse. It's not going to carry you forever. Sooner or later, reality intrudes. Somebody like Melody comes along and bursts your bubble by telling you the truth, and then what?
I don't want to burst anybody's bubble. I just want them to, you know, like I said, we all change the...
Can't help I might, tell the truth.
I just might change the program's name, not Financial Survival anymore, but to Financial Reality. Yeah. I mean, it's because the reality is, and as much as I'd like to see it continue, the reality is not there in order to do it. You know, we're going right back to the same as 2008 levels. Yeah. Total household debt climbed to $12.58 trillion at the end of 2016. That's an increase of $266 billion from the third quarter. And this is according to a report from the Federal Reserve. For the year, household debt ballooned by $460 billion. That's the largest increase in almost a decade. That means the debt loads of Americans are flirting with 2008 levels. Yeah. When total consumer debt reached a record high of 12.6
But this time it's
trillion.
Different, Melody.
This time it is different.
Yes.
It's not in the mortgages.
No. Not to the same extent. But it's also in automobiles. And second, number two is student debt, if I understand correctly.
You have
mortgage
credit
is number
card
one.
Debt. You have credit card debt, student loans, and auto loans. Those are the key factors fueling the rebound in debt. But the difference is you have the same amount of money in debt. It's just when you look at credit card debt, hey, you pay those minimum bills, it's $10 a month. You never get out of that debt. No. You pay your minimum amount due. And this is why I believe there's probably isn't as many bankruptcies yet. You know, because they're able to pay $10 instead of, you know, something larger like a house payment with the property taxes, with the insurances, and everything else that goes along with owning a home. So, you know, maybe their debt, even though it's at the same amount, maybe they're able to manage it a little bit better. But for how long? How long before you start passing the debt of 2008 levels at $12.68 trillion? What happens when it's at 14 trillion? Can they handle it then? So, I mean, I think we're at that level of peak optimism.
Yep.
And that was the perfect way for him to describe that. But look at the student loans.
Look at the commercial.
Look at the
break
music.
We're going to
listen
take,
to
Melody.
The music.
Yeah. Got to look at a lot of things. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just wanted to mention the Dallas Police and Fire Pension is getting behind a Texas lawmaker's plan to save the retirement system from financial collapse. Sounds great, Al, huh?
Well, I'll tell you, well, they're going to, it used to be, remember the Alamo, and now we're going to do save the pension system.
Save the pension system.
Yeah, I think it's evidence of a shift in the way the Texas and the whole country's thinking.
Absolutely. They have to, because I mean, even under this administration, if we listen to the campaign promises, more responsibilities were going to go back to the states. So that means the states are going to have to pick up a lot of the funding, and half of the states and cities across this country, they're ready for bankruptcy anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, how much more can, you know, be given back to the states when they don't have the money? And but for the Dallas Police and Fire Pension, they voted yesterday to back a proposal by Dan Flynn. He's the chair of the Pensions Committee in the State House of Representatives that would raise the retirement age to 58 from 55, eliminate cost of living adjustments, and lower a multiplier used to determine the size of officers' and firefighters' benefit checks. So there's the takeaway. That's what they're going to take from you.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get as much. And you have to be older. The plan
which means
also,
what? You know, that's interesting. That's interesting language that they use, and we're going to reduce the retirement age from 58 to 55 and so on. We're going to change this multiplier. And what are they talking about other than a default?
Yeah.
They had a promise. They made a promise to pay. They're not paying. They're defaulting on pre-existing debt. They're going to try to persuade the other party, which is the retirees and the Dallas and police and firemen, are going to try to persuade them to go along with the program, and they probably will. Because if they don't go along with it, they're going to lose everything.
Yep.
Right? But what we're talking about, with when you strip away all the fancy language, we are talking about government defaulting on its debt.
Yep.
And that is significant, right? It is a leaf in the breeze. It's not, you know, forget the language. They're not paying their debts. And we've told you for years on this program that they can't pay their debts. The debt is too big to be repaid, right? In full. And there's going to be serious adjustments, and you will undoubtedly see some government agencies and employees groups and unions and the rest of that. They'll insist, no, we are entitled to whatever it was we were promised, and that may not be true. It may be true legally, it might not be true morally, but it won't matter. They're still going to lose. And it's evidence that this country is inching towards some sort of a governmental bankruptcy.
The thing of it is, these people,
at least for
also,
some states, maybe the federal government,
these pension, these states and these governments should be sued, because the reason, in particular Dallas, the reason they lost was because of their exotic investments that they lost. Hawaiian villas, undeveloped land in Arizona. What right do they? Uruguay timber. I mean, come on. You know, they were promising huge percentages on returns. They should be sued for these investments that they did and lost the people's money. But the plan that continues on, and here's another part. again, people, it sounds like, oh, good, they came up to a plan, and, you know, at least people aren't going to lose everything. And Al's right. This is basically a default. So the city, they're going to increase Dallas's annual contribution to 34.5%.
From what?
From 27%.
So they're getting an extra 7% is coming from the
city.
Where is the city going to get that money?
Plus $11 million a year in addition to the 34.5%. Well, and this is according to audited financial statements. Employee contributions would climb to 13.5%. From where? 8.5%.
Oh, I'm sure that the current employees would love having their income reduced by 5% in order to take care of the
pension,
previous retirees or the people that are going to retire. I'm sure that, but it illustrates one thing that's true. This business of we'll just get the government, we'll get some politician at your local government, and he will promise the union. The employees' union for the government, he will promise them some fantastic retirement.
Yep.
But the truth is, where are they going to get the money from? The truth is, everyone is operated on the assumption that we would just stick it to the taxpayers. The idiot taxpayers, they'll pay their pensions, and we can live large. We work for the government. We're connected. We're made men. So get these idiot taxpayers. Well, the idiot taxpayers, I mean, whether they even are willing to pay the increases or the amount of funds that are necessary to keep the pensioner, the retirees in the style to which they've become accustomed, whether they're willing or not is another question entirely. Can they, when we have levels of unemployment that some people say, I know the government says it's less than 5%, but there's some people who say, no, really, when you calculate the people that aren't working who should have jobs and have quit looking for jobs and whatever, we have over 20% unemployment. Where are we going to get the money to pay for these retirees? And the lesson in all of this is if you want to fund your retirement program and you are depending on someone else to give you the money you need, you're going to need when you're retired, you are in a risky position. If you want money for your retirement, it's up to you to implement whatever strategy you think is appropriate to guarantee that you have some money when push comes to shove and you don't have a job anymore. It's up to you, and it should be. We can't just sit back. I mean, that's where they're going to be police employees and fire department employees, and they're going to be screaming about their pensions. But the truth is, they made an enormous mistake when they sat back and they said, we're going to rely on the taxpayers to fund us. We don't have to pay our own pensions. And that's essentially what was promised by government. They had to pay something, but they knew that we'll get most of it. They assumed they'd get most of it out of taxpayers. Pay your own pension. Provide for your own retirement. If you're not willing to do that, when the wolf comes growling at the door, you got nobody to blame. You put the bait out there to attract the wolf when you said, I'll get somebody else to fund my pension. Got to do it yourself. Just harsh reality, in a sense. Nobody wants to. We would all rather have our pensions funded by somebody else. We can go out and party for the 40 years we work, and then we can continue partying on somebody else when we retire. Not going to happen. So what we see at the Dallas and the police and fire department, it is just a leaf in the breeze. I'm sure we're seeing it in other places right now to a greater or lesser degree, Chicago, for example, and we're going to see it more. And there's nothing to be done about it except accept the fact that we have done some stupid things. And when I say we, I mean all of us. This isn't a situation where, well, it's their fault. No, it was our fault. Your fault, my fault, insofar as we relied on those pensions. I said, we're going to get the idiot taxpayers to pay for us. Not going to happen. Too bad.
And they might look good because, you know, some of these retirement accounts are going to look great when you have, you know, all these record highs in these stock markets. But the question is it going to be there next year and the year after? And well, I just don't see how
many of these pension funds are based on stocks, how many are based on bonds.
Yep. So
The bonds are in big trouble, in my opinion. Yep. I mean, those are going to collapse probably before the stock market does. If I had to guess, it'd be my guess, but we'll watch and see.
You know, we talked earlier about the State of the Union address, and usually in the first year of the president, he will forego the official State of the Union, because that is traditionally delivered in January or early February. Some of the past presidents will do a special presentation. They will address the nation, but it doesn't constitute as a State
of
the
Union. It is interesting. It is interesting because I think it's required in the Constitution, isn't it? I think they have to. I think they're required in the Constitution to report on what's going on at least once a year. And if they don't in an election year, I could be mistaken about what I think about my notion on the Constitution, but if they don't in an election year, why not? And the question is, who would deliver that State of the Union? The outgoing president, he's going to tell you everything's great. I'm the best president you ever had. The incoming president, he wants to establish that the previous president is responsible for everything. Everything that's gone wrong, including if your cake didn't rise properly, that was the fault of the previous president. It'd be hard to get an honest State of the Union.
The presidential address to Congress is stipulated in Article 2 of the Constitution, mm-hmm. Which states the president shall from time to time give to Congress information of the State of the Union. So what the past five presidents have done, Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush Sr., and Reagan, they delivered statements to a joint session of Congress shortly after their inauguration. So... and then they give the formal State of the Union address the following year. So whether Trump continues the same tradition to deliver a 2017 State of the Union speech still remains to be seen. I don't know if his address, his conference, his speech on Friday would be sufficient, but I don't believe that was to the Congress. It was to the people. It was, a press conference. So I can't imagine how that would be I would think he would need something more of a formal address. So,
well, it's interesting, and it is an interesting. It really is. Just imagine that Obama had delivered the State of the Union address in the first week of January. Wouldn't that have been something to hear? It would either make people laugh or scream. It's hard to say. Obama was, we did everything just about right, and everything's great. We're handing a wonderful economy off to Mr. Trump, and if it screws up, it's his fault. It's not my fault. It's his fault. Whole thing would have been, I don't know, it would make for a wonderful Saturday Night Live skit. You know, if we could compare between the two presidents, say maybe even fighting between them, who should give the State of the Union address?
Wait a second, Trump, hold on. I just think I just saw something as I was going through. President Trump plans to address a joint session of Congress on February 28th.
Even that.
So there.
But it's, it's traditionally in January. It would have made for... inquiring minds would want to know. This would have been a great year to have a State of the Union address, because howls of laughter. It would have been comical, probably.
So, February 28th will be the official address to joint session.
Not
Congress.
February 29th.
Not 29th. I bet the media.
Media
is wishing it. It's the 29th.
We have it on Sadie Hawkins Day. We're going to address the Congress, and if they don't have a Sadie Hawkins Day this year...
Sadie Hawkins Day gives away your age, Al.
No, it doesn't. Yes. Offers no clue. That's something from the immortal Little Abner cartoon series, which has probably been out of business.
Oh, I know what Sadie Hawkins is.
Well, then it's giving away your age also, Melody. How about that?
You probably...
How about that?
You probably told me before. Uh-huh. But anyway, so yeah, Sadie Hawkins Day.
Here's something from Phoenix Capital that is a little bit parallel to what we've talked about. The headline is, "The markets are misreading what Trump can and cannot do. Big league." I mean, big time here, in my opinion. But the Trump presidency continues to be a boon to stock investors, with Trump's tweeting having become a kind of administrative plunge protection team that ignites a new rally anytime stocks are in danger of breaking down. It is kind of interesting, this tweeting. What it reminds me of, it's a little bit of the Pied Piper. You know, instead of playing the flute, he's playing the tweet, if you catch my drift. But he is the Pied Piper lured the kids out of Hamelin, and the Trump's tweeting is to some degree luring people into the stock market, or at least investors right now, and inspiring false confidence. And I'll give you another one that crosses my mind. You know, the story of Pandora in Greek mythology, where Pandora was sent to Earth and she had a box that she was supposed to keep quiet, don't open this, whatever you do, don't. Well, of course, she had to open it. And it contained all the evils and troubles in the world that would afflict the world. And she opened the Pandora's box, and and what was left? There was only one thing left in the box, and that was hope. All right, but that's an interesting, metaphor. It's an interesting idea, because it suggests that maybe hope is evil. All right, the Greeks left a certain amount of ambiguity there. Hope was the only thing left in the box. But it was in a box full of the evils that would afflict mankind. Is hope a good thing? Is hope a blessing? Is hope an evil thing? I mean, you can get into hope where you really think you get that optimism and you start hoping, oh my God, we're going to 30,000 in the stock market. We're going to be rich. Well, I don't know. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? That enthusiasm, that optimism is to some degree an expression of hope. And the Greeks left that question unanswered. The Greek mythology left the question unanswered. Is hope good, or is it deceiving? In any case, this article from Phoenix Capital says, however, the reality is that Trump can only tweet the markets into rallying for so long. Trump is inheriting an 8 years of the most profligate Fed monetary policy in history, a balance sheet expansion of $3.5 trillion, that's for the Federal Reserve, and 7 years of near zero interest rate policy, which permitted the United States government to double its debt load. All right? Oh, here we go again. Melody, you didn't tell me we were getting up close to break here. My clock, now we're getting it. Now it's time. All right, we're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and we'll be back and talk a little bit more about what the markets are doing to misread what Trump can and can't do. Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey water purification systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey light systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey light system today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I got a couple of little packages. I have, and these are limited, 1 ounce American Krugerrand. Not American. 1 ounce South African Krugerrand. You don't hear me talk much about Krugerrands, but I have a few coming in, and I thought, well, I would offer it for a special on the program today. You're running about $42 over spot for a 1 ounce Krugerrand and 20 1 ounce silver rounds. And this really is a nice package. It includes all your shipping cost for $1,675. The 1 ounce silver rounds are the really pretty buffalo rounds. It's the only kind of rounds we sell. We keep consistent. I mean, you can get all kinds of stampings from private manufacturers and so forth, and, you know, things that people don't know and don't recognize, but the silver buffaloes are highly recognizable and acceptable for your 1 ounce silver rounds. It includes your shipping costs and I don't know why I keep saying an American Krugerrand, a 1 ounce South African Krugerrand, $1,675. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com.
When we broke for the commercial, we're talking about an article from Phoenix Capital. The markets are misreading what Trump can and cannot do. Big league, big time, I mean. And again, it says reality is Trump can only tweet the markets into rallying for so long. Trump is inheriting an 8 years of the most profligate Fed monetary policy in history, a balance sheet expansion of $3.5 trillion, and 7 years of near zero interest rate policy, which permitted the U.S. government to double its debt load. Put simply, whatever economic and financial issues arrive, the Fed has little, if any, dry powder left. At best, the Fed can walk back its hawkishness. Rate cuts and additional QE could not be implemented unless a full-blown financial crisis unfolds. Meanwhile, the U.S. is lurching into a recession. Much of the unmassaged economic data began contracting in the third quarter of 2016. However, this was ignored by most commentators who focused on highly political and highly dubious official gross domestic product numbers. This has continued even as the Fed's GDP now has begun adjusting lower from the ridiculously unrealistic estimate of 3+%. They expected the GDP to go up by over 3% this year. As it stands, first quarter GDP for 2017 is below 2.5% and likely to drop further as more data weakens in the coming weeks. In this context, notion that the Fed is going to embark on an aggressive tightening schedule is ludicrous. That's their opinion. We'll watch and see whether this is true or false. The Fed is engaged in 7 years of the loosest monetary policy in history. The notion that the Fed is going to tighten aggressively when the U.S. economy is contracting is absurd. At this point, all this points, towards a much weaker U.S. dollar in the coming months. Now, if they're correct about that, it means a much higher price for gold also. It says all this points toward a much weaker dollar in the coming months. Trump campaigned on numerous issues, including trade, manufacturing, immigration, and the U.S. economy, and debt levels, and more. However, in terms of economics, all of Trump's policies boil down to one simple theme, a weaker U.S. dollar. Now, if that's true, that means the price of gold is going up. You want to protect your wealth, you're going to put it into gold while the dollar falls. If you have stock, it's denominated in dollars. For example, when the dollars become weaker, you're actually losing money on your stock investments. The same thing is true with bonds. If you had $100,000 in bonds and the dollar becomes weaker, when you sell those bonds for $100,000, you'll get them, but they won't have the same value as the dollars that you invested in the bonds in the first place. That's the implication. Those who realize this and allocate capital accordingly will make a killing in 2017. Well, if they're correct, what do you think, Melody? Are we definitely headed into a weaker dollar?
Oh, absolutely. They can't have the infrastructure spending. They can't do the programs, the tax cuts. They can't do any of that with a strong dollar. So, you know, and this whole system that we have, not just ours, but around the world, it's only been fueled by stimulus. Hey, they're going to print until the cows come home. And we're going to continue to see more stimulus. And as that stimulus does come out, and we're already seeing higher inflation. So, again, you add all of this up, it all equals a weaker dollar. We're going to continue to see that happen. I mean, is it going to fall out of bed from 100 down to 70 overnight? No. But, I mean, we're going to continue to see pressure. And, again, until something breaks, you know, then you could see it drop significantly. But, no, I think we're going to see, you know, I think we'll see gradual decline of the dollar until something breaks. And I do believe there will come a point in time when that break comes.
What we're going to see is almost certainly, it's not impossible that we would see some deflation before this is all over, but long term, we have to see inflation.
No, we've
dollar
already
has
seen.
To be devalued.
I mean, if you go to China and you look at all their PPI and CPI, it's all rising regardless of a higher dollar. So if prices are going to be going higher, regardless of what our dollar is, the dollar might show a little strength. They might be able to buy a little bit more temporarily, you know, because of the stronger dollar. But everywhere you look, you see inflation already creeping in. We won't be able to export our inflation anymore. Not when you have China, when their inflation is, oh, I just read it this morning. I don't, you know, it was up, you know, significantly. You know, with their PPI. So I just don't see where, because of the stronger dollar, where it equals any deflation anymore. I mean, you've had these countries, you had the European Union, you had Japan that have filtered trillions of their currencies into their markets, into their stimulus of their currencies, not trillions of dollars, but in their currency. And it's China's doing the same thing. They're spending money to keep their currency from dropping out of bed and so forth. And you just see it all creeping in. When does it become official? Don't know.
My point is, when we see inflation, one of the reasons I expect to see it is that another way of defaulting on the debt owed by the U.S. government. They'll be able to pay their debt. Significant inflation allows the government to repay its debt with cheaper dollars. And even though they've got $20 trillion, they admit to the official debt is $20 trillion or nearly that, they will, in theory, try to pay that $20 trillion back, but if they pay it back with cheaper dollars, if the dollars were devalued by half of their current value, and that's not impossible, the real size of the national debt would fall from $20 trillion to $10 trillion. They'd be paying $20 trillion. That would, the number numerically would still be on the books, but the value of those dollars would only be worth 50 cents each rather than a dollar each as compared to when the debt was incurred. And the point is, we're just talking about how they are defaulting on the debt here in Dallas, right? The debt that's owed to the policemen and to the fire department, so the fire department retirees and the rest of them, they're defaulting. Now, they're going to conceal this by persuading the police department and the fire department to agree to accept the default. And if they do, then it's not a default. Then they can sit back and say, well, we just worked this out. Well, yeah, but it's a default. That's what it really is. It's a default. But if you force the other side, you can force the other side to agree to it, because if you don't, you lose everything. All right, go ahead. You either cooperate now and accept the same thing is happening when they push inflation on the American people. It's a default. It's a way of saying, well, the people are accepting this inflation, and that in the same sense that the police department and the fire department in Dallas is going to accept a new and improved retirement program where they get less money. Same thing's going to happen to you and me, folks, insofar as we accept that inflation and shake our heads and say, gee, what can you do? There's nothing we can do, and it's not happening so fast it makes our blood curdle, at least not yet. We haven't stumbled into hyperinflation. It's as long as the inflation is modest, people will basically put up with it, but they are being robbed. The government is defaulting on its debt. And the question becomes then, are you going to be one of the people who will accept this default? And just, well, I'll go along with that. It's my job as an American to cooperate when the government makes the currency worth less than it was. Right? You can if you want to. Or you can go out and look for investments that are going to withstand inflation and say and preserve your wealth coming into what will almost certainly be a weaker dollar. Not necessarily the first thing we see, but long term they have to do it. It's, you know, they can't have deflation for long, because it makes the dollars more valuable. It increases, instead of having in the example I used, if we had 50% inflation, the $20 trillion national debt, the value of it falls to $10 trillion, right? If we had 50% deflation, which I don't think anyone has ever had, but if we had 50% deflation, we'd go from $20 trillion debt, national debt, to $30 trillion. In terms of real purchasing power, it would still be $20 trillion. Numerically, it's $20 trillion, but a value would jump to $30 trillion. It can't be paid, can't be paid, can't be paid. They can't withstand deflation, right? Which means they're going to go to inflation sooner or later and make the dollar worth less and less. And by doing so, they are going to reduce their debt. They're going to say, well, it's like paying you off with Confederate money. Yeah, I invested $100,000 in a U.S. bond, and they said, we're giving you $100,000. You see, you can sell it. You can get, well, it's $100,000 Confederate dollars, actually. But still, it's dollars. What are you complaining about? You invested $100,000, now you're getting $100,000. You're getting $100,000 Confederate dollars. It doesn't have the same purchasing power as the dollars you put into those bonds. And those people, if you're going to sit for it, you're going to get robbed. You're going to see your wealth diminished. You're going to lose some or all of your assets. It's up to you, but you have options. And one of those options is to take your money while you can still get your hands on it, take your currency while you can still get your hands on it, and use it to invest in something like gold or silver, which should do very well in times of serious inflation. And we've got to have it. We're going to default. Debt can't be paid. Right? Therefore, inflation. It helps people to pay their debts. It helps the government to avoid going bankrupt, insolvent, and dying for, you know, based on its enormous debt. So, having said that, Melody.
Yes. Yes, Al.
I am now prepared to take my nap.
Hey, though, gold is the greatest thing to own against as a hedge against inflation. I had wanted to talk to you about this because I guess it's going to the Supreme Court today. They're taking up a case that presents a question. Can a U.S. law enforcement officer be sued in American courts for the death of a foreigner outside the United States? And usually for most American history, the question has always been no. But I guess it's headed to the Supreme Court for them to make a decision on. They agreed to take on Hernandez versus Mesa, and I just thought that was sort of interesting because you hear a lot where, you know, with a lot of these.
Dave, the Supreme Court has agreed that it will hear the case, but it's not hearing it tomorrow or whatever. It'll be sometime in the future. They've agreed just today or thereabouts.
Correct.
They'll
Correct.
Hear this case, and it'll take place. Who knows when?
Yeah, but I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were and you know.
Well, it's an interesting case. You say Hernandez versus who?
Mesa.
Hernandez versus Mesa.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's something that I'm going to try to look up and find because it really it raises issues about jurisdiction that are surprising, hard to believe. Well, it may. I mean, I want to see it. Hernandez versus Mesa.
Well, you see a lot of these illegal immigrants that are demonstrating everything, and you hear people talk about their rights and so forth. And I always thought to myself, well, if you're not a citizen, I mean, where are your rights?
See, the question
how does our Constitution cover, and it's just, but you hear a lot of people talk about that.
Well, let's suppose that the police officer didn't have authority to shoot an illegal alien from another country who was in the United States. All right. What is their standing to sue him? And they may not, if they have special protections precisely because they're illegal, he can't shoot the illegal aliens. The illegal aliens sue the cops?
This is exactly what happened. The plaintiffs contend that Hernandez, who was 15 at the time in 2010, was playing a game with some friends that involved running up to a fence at the top of an embankment in front of a culvert that separates Mexico from the United States between El Paso. It goes into, and we're just about out of time.
Okay, so we really are.
But he was a smuggler who twice had been arrested in the United States, was allowed to return to Mexico because of his age. And, got into
what
it.
What can I tell you?
Fired, shots were fired, and he was killed.
Okay, folks, we're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we hope the good Lord blesses you and me and Melody, Todd the producer. Bye-bye. That's too bad. In my